Now it just made me think of who's that song by? The one about getting down with the sickness.
I don't know.
I feel like your sister's a fan.
Oh, probably. She has terrible taste in music.
It was from our childhood. I don't think it ever warranted a mention in an Animorphs book, though, because it was after their time.
Hang on, let's look. Get down. Oh, wow. It's actually, if I write Get Down, it's one of the.
It's like Stained or something. I
Oh,
don't
it's
know.
Disturbed.
Disturbed. The other D without an E band name. I was
Yeah,
close.
I never listened to them. So we're back after a million year hiatus, and much has happened. We've both moved, actually, to different places, not to the same place together, which would be ideal, but unfortunately did not happen. And we are finally easing back into normalcy, and so therefore that means we are here to talk about Animorphs again, and this time it's a very exciting book to return with. It is number 29, The Sickness, which, as I recall, was one of my favorites in the original
It's a
go
great
through.
one.
Exactly. It is The Sickness. And this book is pretty amazing. It's the book in which Cassie saves the day on multiple fronts in really huge ways. Which is very nice because it sort of also makes it very explicit that Cassie struggles with confidence. And what I liked about the book, because she always questions what is the right thing to do, and she always questions it in terms of her own decisions. And it's not quite like Jake, who questions what's the right thing to do as kind of the leader for the people, or the people he represents, or the long-term outcome. Cassie's constantly questioning the things that they have to do, and if those, like, if she can negotiate those with right and wrong. Like, in the beginning, she talks about ripping out Hork-Bajir's throat. Was it just before Jake called them off, or just after? And that makes a big difference to Cassie. And so I liked that struggle was sort of given a chance, like, or gave Cassie a chance to kind of have confidence forced on her, really. Because the way that this book is structured, like, it's fairly obvious that the way that the monkeys jumping on the bed fall off, that it starts with Jake. Well, it starts with Axe, and then Jake, and then Rachel, and then Marco, and then Tobias. So it sort of goes through in order of people that Cassie has the most confidence in, and then finally, like, she stands alone and it's on her.
She's the cheese.
She is the cheese and the monkey.
Oh God, there's many applicable nursery rhymes. It's, yeah, but like, at certain points you can tell that even though, like, Marco jokes about, or it's not, it's more barb than joke. But when he says that, like, that Rachel shouldn't be in charge because she's a psycho and so forth, but Cassie would still prefer it if Rachel were in charge, probably.
Oh,
But she
definitely.
doesn't have to be in charge. And ultimately, she has no choice, and, so she steps up, and then she steps up again, and then she steps up again. She's just stepping up, 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 up. She step up five, the barn. I can't remember what step up they're on. There's a lot of them,
There are a lot of them.
They should all be about her.
They really should be. And I think too, in some regard, Cassie feels very responsible for the situation that they're in. Less so with Axe, but more so the situation with Aftrin. Aftrin?
Aftrin,
Aftrin,
I
which
think.
sounds like an over-the-counter drug of
It
some
does sound
kind.
like a, something for blood pressure.
Yeah, exactly. It is for blood pressure. It just makes their blood pressure go up. So this would be a good time to talk about the actual plot of the book. So this actually connects to a previous book. Is it the most recent Cassie narration, The Butterfly?
I believe so.
So in that book, as all Cassie books do, deal with very big moral dilemmas. There was a question of the gray area of morality. And so, of course, we've dealt with now the fact that some Yerks are not evil, that they want to peacefully coexist, symbiotically with their hosts, and that they don't want to enslave anyone. And good on those Yerks. But the Aftrin is one of them, and she met with Cassie in the Butterfly book, and Cassie allowed Aftrin into her head. So Aftrin knows all of the Animorph secrets, so she's a huge liability for them. And she went off into... Where did she go at the end of the book?
Yeah, she goes back to the Yorkpool and just doesn't take a host. Which... I'm not... Maybe I'm missing something about how the Yorkpool works, or maybe I'm misremembering something about how Yorks work, but... I thought that the way they communicated in their natural state, like, without a host, was, like, you know, through sort of, like, touch, or... But I wasn't really clear on, like, how much information could be passed, like, York to York. Like, tentacles or whatever.
Yeah. So,
like, how safe was that? Was she... Wouldn't they have noticed if she didn't have a host, like, if she just hung out there all the time?
God, Afton, we won't even leave. She's always here.
Right? Like, you should get out more, girl. Go meet a new host, man. Like,
get your parasite on.
They must have some way of policing this. If, like, your whole aim is to take over a planet and you're one of the Yorks who's on that planet, like, you have a job to do.
That is true, but I also wonder if there's enough arrogance there. And I feel like the combination of arrogance that is sort of common in all the other, you know, the general York population that sort of trickles down from Visser 3, combined with the sheer number of Yorks in a York pool, like, I do wonder if, like, no one would ever think to guess that. Someone, you know, one of the Yorks wouldn't want a host, and also how, you know, how many Yorks are in a York pool, and would you really, I don't know, what's the social order in a York pool?
I want this. I suspect it might be in an upcoming Chronicles book. I don't remember.
Probably.
Because I don't remember anything about Visser.
Yeah, which I don't even know if I ever
like
read this.
It's probably the one where we learn all the York stuff. But, like, in this book, it's established that the York Peace Movement now has over 100 members. And, like, is that a lot? Is it a little? Like, I have no context for if this is significant or not. Other than that, Tidwell seems kind of proud.
That is, yes, that is, well, it's something to be proud of. Little baby steps. So there is now a York Peace Movement of which Aftrin is a contributing member. And it turns out also that... a teacher at school, Mr. Tidwell, is also a member. And Mr. Tidwell is infested by a York named Ilum, who decided to become a part of the peace movement. And in return, Tidwell wanted to be a part of something important as well. And so he allowed Ilum to remain in his body so that together they could sort of accomplish something. And there's, like, a really nice, like, sad backstory that, like, Tidwell lost his wife and lost his sense of purpose. And, you know, and so that's, like...
He did get really attached to Ilum. Like, when he comes out of his head so that Cassie can acquire him, he's like, I feel empty. And I'm like, oh.
Yeah.
Right, you are becoming symbiotic. I guess that's a good sign.
Yeah, it's a very weird thing. And of course, I mean, it calls into question everything that we know about Yorks. And, you know, regardless of the fact that we don't really know if the Yorks, do they have a social order in the pool? We don't know. But, I mean, even despite that, we are getting an understanding of the Yorks as more than just, like, the bad guys, which I think is always worthwhile. And something that I think is always good for a Cassie book, because the how do you decide what's good and what's evil, and how do you make the right decisions in under attack, really? Like, it would be really nice to just to choose peace, but if someone is raising a, you know, a fist at you and you choose peace, it's gonna suck for you.
Yeah, this would be a really different book if it were about Marco.
Exactly. Who, Marco, at several points as I was reading, I was just like, God, Marco's, like, quite ruthless.
You know, that's, like, kind of an ongoing joke, usually in his own books, that, like, he's not that good in school, and, like, he's always, like, he's got makeup work to do, or, like, you know, I'm writing this paper right now, and it's due next period. But he's super smart. He kind of reminds me of Joan from Mad Men, actually. Somebody who may not be, like, traditionally educated, but is, like, the smartest person in the room.
Yeah, that's true.
Like, kind of an autodidact, that sort of thing.
Yeah, definitely. So the problem, there's two huge conflicts or problems in this book that really could each have had their own book, and the fact that K.A. just decided to throw them together. And kudos to the ghostwriter, also on this one. Decided to put them together. It makes for a really stressful, like, great read, really. Because the first problem we receive at a school dance, and Axe has, like...
Most accurate school dance ever. God, it was, like, more flashbacks.
And, also Axe has, like, this episode, let's say. He starts demorphing. He's really delirious. He's causing a huge scene, and they have to get him out. And it turns out that he has what to me is basically, like, he needs his appendix out, except his appendix is in his brain, and it, like, has a host of bacteria in it and diseases.
It seems like a poor evolutionary choice.
It does.
I mean, an Andalite isn't always very, very well evolved. They got a big-ass blade for a natural weapon. They can talk with their heads.
They have four eyes.
They have a real handy eating system where it just literally happens as they walk. And then they have a disease organism in their heads. It functions until it fulfills its purpose, and then it kills them.
Yeah.
I guess if you're, like, on your home world with really great doctors, it doesn't matter, but he's on Earth.
Yeah. So, well, that's a big issue. And what's weird is that it's contagious, highly contagious to everyone around him, including humans. And the symptoms there manifest like the flu, which, again, scientifically speaking, is this plausible?
Honestly, yeah. Because if my appendix was needed to be removed, you wouldn't catch it from me.
No.
That's okay, I guess.
Well, it works.
Science aside.
Well, exactly. It works for the premise of the book, which is that they all need to be there to carry out the mission. So the main mission of the book is Aftrin is captured by Visser 3. And, of course, she has all of the information on the Animorph. So if Visser 3 tortures her, at some point she is going to break, and all of that information is going to just detonate and destroy them all. So they have to go rescue Aftrin, and the problem is that everyone keeps getting sick, and it's left to Cassie to infiltrate the Yerk Pool, get Aftrin out, and then there's also the pending problem with Axe. With everyone else, I guess they just get over it. With Axe, Axe actually needs surgery to remove the gland, whatever gland, from his...
The Tria gland.
Thank you. The Tria gland from his head. So somebody's got to perform, like, basically brain surgery.
And since Cassie is the resident vet, she gets to.
She does get to. And it works out really well because, I mean, Axe isn't in no condition to tell anybody where anything is in the universe.
You know, he might not even know. Like,
that is true also.
If you asked me a bunch of questions about what's inside my body, I probably wouldn't be able to answer you.
A liver. Some kidneys are, like, somewhere floating around.
I don't know what my appendix is on. I don't.
Yeah, I don't either.
I don't even know how many ribs humans have.
Oh, you really do. I guess we should explain that joke.
That's okay. The listeners don't need to know the extent of my ongoing embarrassment as a human.
Not ongoing. You were a kid.
I still don't know how many ribs we have.
I think I might not either. Is it 10? Or is it 12?
I don't know.
In elementary school, Diana thought that we had the same number of ribs as a whale, and then she went to count her own ribs and then reached the end of her rib cage and then went, oh. So, that's that story. To this day, we still tease her about ribs because there are great people in her life.
Good Lord song.
This is why it is a good Lord song. I agree. This is why you shouldn't stay friends with the people who knew you in your adolescent and like younger years.
Yeah, usually they can more adequately embarrass you than your parents.
That might be true.
You do dumber stuff around your friends than in front of your parents. Let's be real.
That's probably true. So they don't have any way to find out how to operate. But when it comes time to, because they all, it's like a ticking clock thing. When Axe's fever, his temperature, gets down to 91 point something, then either it has to come out or he dies, plain and simple. And so they have a pretty good strategy. They leave him with Eric, the Chi, who is helpful, but, like, not that helpful, because apparently that would break the Chi rules or whatever.
I suspect what he was thinking of was, like, if Axe tried to get away and he wasn't able to keep him from getting away, then he would have to deal with, like, Cassie's dad, potentially, which would cause a lot more violence, likely, because there's this wacky animal running around his barn that's not actually an animal. And then there would be cops, and so it would just be a big thing, and, like, that's what he's envisioning. Mm. But he does project some real nifty holograms.
That is true. That is helpful.
And then he reads a bunch of books at once.
And then he plays rock, paper, scissors with the axe until Axe owes him $1.7 million.
Also, I'm pretty sure even his fake dad, who was a doctor in 15th century France, would be a little bit useful.
Yeah, I agree on that front.
For surgery.
I think, yeah, Eric should have been way more useful than he was in this book. Not that he wasn't useful at all, but, like, come on, step it up, Chi.
Not that I'm not happy that Cassie got to be... That there were so many Noah Wyle jokes. And that Cassie got to do brain surgery because she was really awesome.
She was really awesome.
Hemostat.
Well, another thing that Cassie does a lot that kind of is physically manifested in this book, and something that she's very... I mean, she's always the one that says we can't morph other humans, we can't morph sentient creatures. But a lot of what Cassie does is spend her time thinking about the point of view of someone else. Like, in the beginning of the book, she's thinking about what it must be like to be a Yurik, and she's, like, very high on, like, empathy, and constantly thinking about, you know, what it's like, and feeling the pain of others, like, in the Horkbajir that she killed, and just, she's always in that space of thinking about other people's perspectives and point of views, and then it's very ironic that in the end of this book, like, she morphs, not only does she morph a Yurik and get a Yurik's point of view, but she also enters a human, Mr. Tinwell's head, and has access to all of his memories. And so I like that sort of echoing of Cassie's thought process and always being very much in her head and also always projecting, you know, what other people must be thinking and feeling and everything in their own heads.
Yeah, this book is pretty hopeful, especially compared to the previous Cassie book.
Yeah.
Although it does continue her trend of morphing things that don't have legs. Well, butterflies have legs, kind of, but they're not very useful.
Yeah. Well, I mean, in general, we talk a lot about how these books are going darker and darker, and they get more and more bleak as they go along. And each of the characters has their own sort of personal cross to bear that, like, gets heavier and heavier until, I mean, it threatens to break them, basically. And Cassie's is the morality issue, and that is what alienates her from Rachel a little bit, and from Marco as well. And I do like that, I mean... shipping aside or whatever, I do like that Jake and Cassie are very aligned on the doing the right thing front, but that it manifests in different ways for them, and that there's an overall similarity and solidarity there, but in that it manifests in different ways, there's also kind of a tension there.
Yeah, I would say Jake is more of the forest and Cassie is the trees.
Yeah.
And, I mean, sometimes she lucks out in that caring about the trees makes the forest stronger, like in this case. But I did like that the other characters didn't just like, oh, well, you know, we all got over it. We forgive you for doing something really dangerous to all of us.
Yeah.
Like, Cassie and Marco, or Rachel and Marco both, like, called her on it in this book. I'm like, this is all your fault. It is. And it's like, yeah, it is.
Well, and in the last book, she considers not being an animorph anymore. Like, she considers even the idea that she is a liability or a weakness in the group and that she's not strong, like Jake or like Rachel or like Marco. And but in reality, like, that makes her, and this book is a nice validation of that, is that makes, it's something, like, that's okay. And that's, like, a strength that she can bring to the group that, you know, they need that.
Yeah, because, like, this book is all about her saving the day and doing it her way as well.
Mm-hmm.
You know, what she does, the choices that she makes are probably not the ones that that Marco or even Jake would have made, but they work out.
Well, and even...
nobody can do it like her.
Well, even when she brings her plan to Marco and tells Marco the plan, Marco, she's really, like, excited that she's found a way to make it work using the parameters that she has in place for her own decisions and her own ethics. And Marco immediately zeroes in, even like as he's vomiting on the street, Marco immediately zeroes in on the strategic end game and finds a flaw in it, which is, what are you going to do if you get her out after meaning?
Then you get to watch her die.
Yeah, because you can't keep her with the Kendrone array and you can't put her in your head.
And her first thought is, she can live in me, you know, it'll be fine. She's not that kind of Yurik, you know, it'll be fine. And maybe it would be fine if Cassie wasn't an Animorph, but she is. And her going to the Yurik pool every 3 days is not really an option.
Nope.
So, but thankfully there's another way.
Yes, and it's a very nice poetic. Way. Yeah, it's a very nice poetic little way. Oh, and it kind of connects back to Cassie and the Whales.
Cassie and the Whales
are tight.
Like, she's got friends on the other side.
She does.
The other side is the ocean.
Yes, she does. So, what they end up doing, she gets Aftrin out of there. And then she successfully... And she puts Aftrin in Axe's head for guidance. So I guess Axe does have that information rattling around somewhere because Aftrin can access it. And then
he
also
for a test and then forgot.
Probably.
when he's in Delirious, when Cassie asks him where he is, he's like, "You said we wouldn't be tested on this." And I'm like,
"Yes, little student Axe, cutie." And so. When it's all said and done, they give Aftrin the power to morph, and on the condition that she would stay in that morph and live the rest of her life as that creature, which honestly, given her current situation, is a pretty great deal.
Plus, they're on Earth, and Earth has been stated and emphasized many times to have a plethora of wildlife like nowhere else. So it's like, there are some really great animals to choose from, and she picked probably the best.
Well, she basically gets to have the life that she wanted without having to enslave anyone. Win-win. Yeah. Like, she can see, she can experience things, like, she can hear, she
Whales
can...
talk to each other.
Yeah, like, there's... She's just moved up on the animal socialization ladder, as it were.
And she still gets to live in water.
Yeah. And whales probably have a really long lifespan.
Yeah. What is she, a humpback?
Probably.
I don't remember if it's stated, but most whales live a really long time unless they get killed by humans.
So I think that might take care of it for us.
Yeah.
Do you have anything else to add?
This is a good one. I was very pleased to reread it. And, I mean, I always love a Cassie book, but I especially like the ones that... That helped prove her stance is a viable one.
Agreed. And yeah, to counter a book, I feel like this book is not one of the one-off fun ones, which we've talked about, like those are few and far between later as we go, but it's also, and it is high stakes, but it's in a way, it's not, you know, doom, gloom, bleak. Like
yeah,
there's
like,
victory.
It says, like,
there's double victory.
They won one. Like, everything was okay. Cassie saved the day on both fronts.
Yeah. Yeah, and she says, yeah, she even says, like, you know, we won one. And and Jake goes, like, no, you won one. Because all of us had the flu.
And then they kissed.
Did they?
No. But I'm sure they did.
Probably. Let's just say
the
they did.
At the beginning, when they're talking about the dance, and Cassie's like, we've only kissed once, but I would like it to happen again.
Cute.
Like, all right, why don't you go make that happen?
Thank you for joining us, rejoining us after this very long hiatus for book number 29, The Sickness. So next time we will be talking about, we actually have a Megamorphs coming up before number 30. So we will be doing Megamorphs, Elfanger's Secret, and then after that we will be doing number 30, The Reunion, featuring Marco as a cockroach. That looks gross. And we will be back to review it with you. Until then... Have a wonderful day.